a dare at stake, guess you all know it well.
Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Steve Hanna had no intention of living in Wisconsin, but life and love had other plans, and thanks to a chance detour many years ago, the New Jersey native found himself in the Dairy State. He's never really left. Hanna is a former managing editor for the Milwaukee Journal, and he was the CEO of The Onion for more than a decade. But one of his longest-running columns was once called State of Mind, and in it, Hanna documented the funny, the weird, and the poignant across his adopted state. Those columns have been turned into a book-long love letter to Wisconsin. Dairylandia, Dispatches from a State of Mind, came out earlier this fall, and Lake Effect's Bonnie North reached Hanna at his home in Madison to learn more.
Steve Hanna, it is a pleasure to have you on Lake Effect. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me. And as I said before we were on the air, I get a little homesick for Wisconsin in winter because I spend part of it down in Texas, and I listen to WUWM. I just tell Alexa, put on WUWM Lake Effect, and she occasionally does what I say.
Well, see, when she does it next time, you can say, play my interview.
I don't know that I'll be able to bear that.
Can't listen to yourself.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's like reading your own work. It's hearing your own voice. And speaking of reading your own work, I loved Dairylandia.
Thank you.
It is such a delightful, basically, it's like a travel guide through Wisconsin. And the thing that struck me the most was how much you love this state.
Yeah, well, you have to fall in love with someone or someplace, and when it comes to someplace, if you grow up in the most congested state in the Union, which is New Jersey, and particularly in the part that I grew up in, you know, in the shadow of the Empire State Building.
I was going to say, you're in northern New Jersey, right?
I'm in northern Jersey, right across the river from Manhattan. I worked in Manhattan a number of times, and I think you saw that in the book. My first job was at CBS News in New York, but I was so happy to move to a place where you actually can't see what you're breathing. And just breathtaking scenery, people were extraordinarily welcoming. And as Michael Perry said in the introduction of the book, and I don't know if you find this because you're from New Hampshire, but he said that 40 years in, this guy is a perpetual newcomer.
Yes. It's the same in New Hampshire.
And it's part of the charm, I think, of being here, because so much of it continues to be new to me, despite the fact that I've traveled the state from Kenosha to Superior and everywhere in between.
And you not only traveled, but you wrote these wonderful little vignettes of people that you met, people you were interested in, and and it was called State of Mind.
Right.
And so the subtitle of this book is Dispatches from a State of Mind. And I think you make the case in a lot of the different people that I met through reading this that it's not only the physical place, but it is a state of mind. There is a particular Wisconsin ethos or way of viewing the world that is unique to the state.
I think it's absolutely unique to the state. I would even argue that it's probably unique to, it's unique to lots of places between two coasts. My daughter, incidentally, who was my constant nag on the book, kept saying to me, you should call this Between Two Coasts, because while it's about Wisconsin, and it's centered in Wisconsin, it really applies to any place other than New York and L.A. I think it's peculiarly Wisconsin. And if you have just a moment, I think we do, when I was the managing editor of the Milwaukee Journal back in the 80s and 90s, I had a boss named Sig Gisler, who was editor-in-chief and went on to become the head of the Pulitzer Prizes. And I begged him, incidentally, every year to award me a Pulitzer and award the Onion a Pulitzer, too. But he
refused?
He refused, At one point, we actually mounted, we did a video with Tom Hanks and Arianna Huffington and Mario Batali and even Glenn Beck, who wasn't a great fan of The Onion. And we did a video in which people like Hanks would say, I will never pay any respect to the Pulitzer Board again until they award the Pulitzer to The Onion, so richly deserved.
And he was unswayed.
He said, you can come to the award luncheon, but you're not getting a prize.
And you have to pay for your own
lunch.
I
paid for my own lunch.
Right.
But Sig, when I was the managing editor, we had a story that broke. You know, we covered all of Wisconsin, and we'd get down into northern Illinois and parts of Iowa, and we had a separate edition for the UP of Michigan. But Minnesota was sort of forbidden territory. And a story broke in Minnesota, and it was really interesting, but it was across the state line. And so I think the city editor, or the state editor must have been, came to me and said, we really need to go up there and do that. And I said, but, you know, it's not in our neighborhood, so forget it. And Sig ushered me into his office later and said, I want you to remember one thing, young man from New Jersey. Wisconsin is not just a state. Wisconsin is a state of mind. And that's where the title for my weekly opus came, and also where, you know, a lesson about Wisconsin, that is that certain things that are peculiar to Wisconsin can even happen just beyond the borders.
I was struck by, of course, you talk to a lot of dairy farmers, because there are a lot of dairy farmers in
right.
the state. And one of my uncles was a dairy farmer in Rhode Island. And so I was recognizing, even though the accents are different, you know, and the topography might be a little different, I was recognizing that farm humor. Mm-hmm. And you, I think you captured it so well, that here are these salt-of-the-earth people, but they are not unsophisticated.
No, they're not unsophisticated at all. They had wonderful senses of humor, and I think I actually, well, I'll back up a step. And the step is that when I moved here, I was headed to Los Angeles from New York. I stopped in Chicago. An old friend from college out east was working for the NBC affiliate there, and he had transferred from Colgate University, where I went to school. And he went to Wisconsin because he said, this is in the 70s, and he said, their riots are so much better than our campus riots, and I need to go where there are really decent riots. This is not even respectable here. So I ended up in Chicago, and I was there, allegedly going to be there for one night, and he said, you know, I'm going to marry a woman from Wisconsin. And I said, that's odd. And where is that, incidentally? He said, well, in any event, would you like to meet her? And I said, yeah, it'd be wonderful to meet her. And he said, do you mind if she brings her roommate along? And I said, I don't care if she brings her entire family along. I'm leaving tomorrow, but I'll be really polite. And the roommate, that is my buddy's fiance's roommate, I ended up marrying her. And she was from Madison, Wisconsin. Her father taught at the UW-Madison. And that's how I came up here. It was basically a wrong turn. I was headed east to west, and she made me go north, and I came up here and I said, I've never seen anything quite so beautiful. And I'd never seen so many farms, of course, in my life, because we just had industrial things in New Jersey for the most part.
Well, at least in the part where you were. There are farms out west as you get closer to Pennsylvania, but you have to go find them.
Very good, yes. If you get out past Morristown, Hackettstown, and you're approaching the Delaware Water Gap, there are some beautiful farms out there. So I would never trash my home state. It was just, let's just say it was entirely different. There's the farm thing I'd return to for a moment. I got out here. I needed a job. I was doing freelance work for the Capital Times and the State Journal in Madison and the Milwaukee Journal, which at that time I'd read an article in Time magazine that said it was one of the 10 best newspapers in America. So I was determined to get a job there. And I did freelancing for probably a couple of years when finally they called me one day and said, we have a job for you. And I was thrilled because in addition to other needs, I was just about broke. And they said, and I thought, well, they're going to have me covering. They'll probably send me to Washington to cover the, you know, the United States Senate, or at least the President of the United States. And they said, we're going to make you the farm editor. And I said, you're going to make me what? I said, I don't know the front end from the back end of a cow. I did work in a supermarket in high school, but that's about the only qualification I have. And they said, well, the Milwaukee audience, for the most part, at least the lion's share of the audience, is urban. And you will have to learn it and then explain it to the urban audience. So I ended up, as the book says, there's a section in there about my farm experiences as the accidental agriculturist.
Yes, and wonderfully rendered, I might say.
Thank you.
And it's like being thrown into the deep end and go ahead, swim.
Yeah.
Do you think you could have written these dispatches now? I mean, the dairy industry has changed. Family farms have changed so much. Could these have been done now?
I think the farming world has always been tough. But, you know, when I first began, which would have been the mid-70s, there were, I want to say, without making an exact count this morning, there were thousands of family farms. And as you know, they're disappearing very, very quickly. And there was a more, I hesitate to say sentimental, but there was a dairy farming family culture that existed then that I'm not so sure exists today. And largely because the business has changed so dramatically, and small farms are not so much places where you raise your family and they're close by. Everybody's working hard to make a buck these days. And not that they weren't working hard, rather, to make money in those days, but there was just a kinder, gentler culture, certainly kinder and gentler than anything I'd been introduced to. And I think, as you may have noticed in the book, at one point, I was ordered by my editor to go out and spend a year, in effect, with a farm. And I found a farm family that would tolerate me. And it was, I have to say, it was probably the greatest year of my life. I just loved it. I got to know the family. I kept in touch with them even afterwards. And I had a wonderful photographer at the Journal named Irv Gebhardt, who was just brilliant. And so we chronicled sort of a year in the life of a family farm. And I think it would be harder to find that farm today.
Did they allow you to milk? Did you ever learn to milk?
But no, I didn't. By the time I got to them, they had gotten out of the milking business. They had been in it for years.
That's right. They were raising heifers.
Replacement heifers.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which I didn't even know existed as a business.
Oh, yeah.
Until I read your book.
Yeah, they bought them for like $200 and sold them for, fed them and then sold them for $650. But they were kind, they were tolerant, and most of all, they were patient. And they taught me a lot from the time they planned in the wintertime till the time they went out and bought their seed and put it in the ground. And it was a wonderful experience. And I just talked to one of the children. She's in the book, actually, who kind of updates me on their family farm. The farm, incidentally, was in Lake Delton, just on the edge of what we know as the Dells, and today their farm is gone. And her name was Barbara Schultz. And she, when I was talking to her on the phone last summer, she said, "Take a ride up there and be prepared for a shot to your sentimental side." I went up, and where the old yellow farmhouse stood, and where her mother and father had lived for all those years, and all the kids were raised, and where her mom and dad both died in that house. If you go exactly on that little plot of earth where the house stood, it's a big Hampton Inn today, surrounded by Culver's and Panera's and Five Guys and everybody's buffet. And the woods that the kids played in is now the Kalahari Resort.
Yeah, I remember as I was reading that chapter thinking, you know, in some ways progress is inevitable and we shouldn't stop it. We have to keep moving.
Yep.
But at the same time, it's sad to lose those touchstones and that part of the past that, you know, you want to bring forward. And I have to say, one of the things that I really loved about the book is that while there is sentiment in it, it's not sentimental. And I didn't feel like you were saying, we have to return to this. You were chronicling something, you were enjoying learning about it, you're sharing it with us. But I didn't feel like there's this gloss of, you know, fuzzy lens looking back. I mean, this was hard work, and, you know, people never had a vacation.
No.
And the animals always
the
came first. Yeah, the animals came first, and you don't sugarcoat that. And,
no.
And I have to say, I appreciate that as sort of a tangential, you know, as having my uncle being a dairy farmer. You know, it was bloody hard work, and they never went anywhere.
Yeah, well, you said it better than I could. I mean, they never went anywhere, and they were absolutely wedded to the farms, and they milked them at 4:30 a.m., and they were milking them again at 5 o'clock. And for a farmer to take a vacation was just astonishing. An awful lot of logistics had to be put in place.
Yeah, you had to have somebody come in and take care of those animals the way you would take care of them that you trusted because they couldn't not be milked.
But, you know, one wonderful thing about the farming culture in Wisconsin, to the extent it still exists, and it does exist, just a lot smaller than it used to be, I found that when I was at the Milwaukee Journal, and even at the Onion, because most of the Onion kids, you know, was founded in Madison, and they came from smaller towns in Wisconsin, even the people who worked at the Journal, they were only a generation or two removed from the farm, and they had that same work ethic. It was, that sounds sentimental, but it was absolutely true. If I had a kid who applied, and he had gone to Yale, to undergraduate, and Northwestern, to journalism school, and I'm thinking of somebody in particular, and I had a person who grew up on a farm and went to UW Oshkosh and was the first in his family to get a degree, chances are that that kid from Oshkosh would outwork the person from the fancy schools. How's that put?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. There is a certain kind of, I don't know, I don't want to call it blue collar because that's not exactly what it is, but there is a certain kind of, when you're working with your hands, you're working with animals, you're working with the seasons, you know, you're working with the land that you actually live on, you do think about things differently. You can't not do it.
Yeah, otherwise you don't make a living and you can't feed your family.
Exactly.
So that was incredibly important. And I just thought those people were just wonderful people.
Well, Steve Hanna, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show. The book is called Dairylandia, Dispatches from a State of Mind. Are you going to be in the Milwaukee area doing any readings?
I have a bunch of invitations, and just because I'm going back and forth from Texas, the next time I'm in Milwaukee is on Saturday, let me just check this here, Saturday, December 7th at 10 a.m., I'm going to do an event at the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. So
that's a great place to do it, too. Have you seen the new museum?
I've been there. It's just gorgeous,
it's wonderful.
Gorgeous. And I'm going to be interviewed by a fellow who I worked with when I was at the Journal, a guy named John Torinas. You may know John.
I do.
John was a business editor at the Sentinel, and he's a great patron of the museum, and he's graciously agreed to interview me. So I'm looking forward to that. And I may be back a few other times in December because, Bonnie, you got to move these books.
And I was going to say, I thought you were going to say, well, I got to come up to have snow for Christmas.
Yeah, well, I actually usually do love to have snow for Christmas, but this year is going to be a little more difficult. But thanks so much for reading the book, and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I really did. Steve Hanna, again, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Steve Hanna is the author of Dairylandia, Dispatches from a State of Mind. Hanna is the former managing editor of the Milwaukee Journal and was a longtime CEO of The Onion. He now divides his time between Wisconsin and Texas, and you can find more information about his book at wuwm.com. Yes, my home's in Wauwatosa, and I